Being human is already bad enough. So, on top of that, why be a weak one? The answer to this question has not been found yet, because the question itself has not been asked with enough persistence. We tend to go with the flow. We cry when something is cheerworthy. We laugh and smile when something is funny. We get mad, upset when something invites us to be so. We usually make our lives depend on what is obvious, or so it seems. The truth is that behind the obvious that is obvious to the general population, there is also an obvious that is not so obvious. That obvious is only perceived by the 1%, those who can lay back and observe what is not so apparent. It's easy to be the person who one says is human, the person who is loved because of their sensitivity, the person who's admired for being non-conflictual in such a way that his fellow humans do not need to think of him while making decisions. As you're listening to me, I want you to think about a few people who have impacted your life in various ways, not because they are your families, not because they are your friends, not because they have any specific link with you, but because they have a broad influence in life altogether. Think about your favorite artist. If they are your favorite artist, that means for sure that they have changed, perfected, or altered something in your life, right? Now, think about what you'd be in your life if those people never existed, or maybe never came out on top of the art. Just think about it. The absolute best you or anyone for that matter can offer in life depends on something that psychologists call the schema of development. It's just a reference to how our brain is wired from the moment we were born. It serves throughout our infancy and our adulthood. And whatever we have become depends on how we have been wired throughout our whole life. However, at some point, we start to make conscious decisions, whether we are aware or not. We make choices that are designed to either amplify or obliterate our best conceived perceptions of life. For those of us who understand that every micro behavior they harbor, every micro action they take can have a vast impact on their own lives and on the life of others, they start making decisions in a deliberate manner. The decisions they make mainly depend on what they have decided to become in the near future. Most of the time, there are a few existential questions that come as a precedent to the decisions to be, and most importantly, to become. Basically, those questions are, who am I? What am I supposed to achieve? And how do I get there? But don't get me wrong, not everybody will ask themselves those questions. They only come in consideration when someone really decides to fully become what they are. Because mind you people, we are all destined to greatness. Whether or not you achieve greatness depends on what you decide to do with your life and how you decide to do it. The title of this episode might sound a bit presumptuous, and that is the reason why I'm daring that. Godlikeness, what is that? When someone says I'm godlike, well, I personally say all the time. But I don't say because it sounds good. I say with intention. I say it because I really mean it. I say it and put intention behind it. Let's back up a bit and break it down. What does it mean to be godlike? Aristotle said that men are by nature social animals. Those who do not act social because they do not have the capabilities are beasts. Those who do not act social because they do not feel the need to act social are gods. Then there are those in between who do know how to act social and actually do act social. Those are men, those are human beings, as in social beings. What interests us in this episode is those that Aristotle calls the gods. Those who know how to act socially, but do not because they don't feel the need to. Now, why does he call them gods? In what way are they godlike? Because of course, when he says gods, he is not saying that literally, but rather figuratively, because those people embody the attributes of a god. When we think about a god, or just God, what kind of attributes do we think of? Well, we think perfection, right? We think omnipotence, we think omniscience, we think omnipresence. Omnipotence means all powerfulness. Someone who is omnipotent can do everything and anything they put their mind on. Omnipresent means that one is present everywhere at the same time. Omniscience means that one knows everything. For God, those things are literally meant. He really is omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent. However, for a godlike person, those things are meant figuratively. I'm saying it a second time for y'all to understand what I mean by that. They just embody the characteristics of God. Let's break it down. God created the universe from nothing. So he really is the universe itself. All the principles that apply to the creation of the universe are so because God made them to be so. Now, when a principle applies to something that is material, the deep nature of that thing aligns with the overall nature of the whole organism, right? So, when we think of gravity, an object that goes up must come down. It's only logic. That object is then submitted to the laws of the environment it is living in. Because if the same object happens to be in a different environment where gravity does not apply, then the other laws that apply in that other environment will apply to it, right? So basically, that has nothing to do with the object per se. It just is how the environment is set up. However, God set up the environment. He did not set up that environment for it to be flawed. So he orderly put everything in conjunction with ultimate design. Where does this design come from? Obviously, we should know it, right? It comes from his mind. To understand this part, let's refer to our own reality. When we aim to do something, we first think about it. Then we implement it from the perception that we have of our own thought. Before we can accomplish anything, we need a mental representation of that thing. And we need it as concise as possible, so we know what wingspan to give to it. So, when God decided to create our world, our universe, our reality, let's call it that, he needed to represent what is it that he would look, feel, and be like. How would he design human beings? What environment would they live in? What would the laws be like in that environment? He thought about that, and then he went to the stage of the actual creation of all of it. Some theology theorists think we never left God's mind. In other words, we still live in God's mind. We are the creations. We are the creations of their mind. But their mind is superior, and it works in such a powerful way that when it created us, it made us as detailed as it needs us to be. That is what those theologians call the universal mind. The universal mind is the mind that knows it all, because everything exists in the mind. There is no feeling outside of the mind. There is no knowledge outside of the mind. The universal mind is our reality. And since we live in that reality, then we live in that mind. What we breathe, the way we function, what we think, all exists in the mind. Since we belong to the mind, we cannot think outside of the scope of the mind, because there is nothing outside of the mind, because there is no outside to that mind. All we can possibly have access to is only accessible because it exists inside of the mind. So, in all, the mind is everything. The mind knows everything, and the mind is everywhere. Now, you can see that the mind is omnipotent because it created everything. Then the mind is omniscient, so it knows everything because it created everything. And then the mind is omnipresent because as it created everything, then there is a small part of it in everything. So, in consequence, it is everywhere. That's the mind of God, the universal mind. One might feel a little disoriented by the whole conundrum because the question of the accuracy of this consideration still stands. Especially from an atheist standpoint, there are a lot of counter questions that could put the reasoning into jeopardy. However, that is not what we are interested in here. We are basing this whole argument on the premise that God exists and is really everything we say Him to be, meaning omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent. This plurality of character in the same entity is what really makes it worthy of situation. For one entity to be all those things, it should be above every description. And that's exactly the reason why we still stand on the quicksand when it comes to accurately describe what or who God is. Hence, everyone choosing their way of looking at it. One thing is certain. He, she, or it is above everything and everyone. And because of that, we adore and worship Him. He is beyond and outside any reasonable understanding we could have. The fact is that human beings can only comprehend so much in life. So, if God can only be comprehended through a set of dimensions that is not accessible to us, then it'll be completely impossible for us to get what is really God, right? But at least we have a thin idea of God. That is what makes us capable of emulating Him. What would it mean for a human being to emulate God in real life? What would it mean for a human being to be godlike? First of all, let's pause for a minute and respond to a critique. One thing that I usually receive in argument to the statement I'm godlike is that, oh, you're being pretentious, you're being cocky, you're being egotistical, you've got to be humble, and so on and so forth. But there's a problem though. For a person to say they are godlike is for them to compare themselves to God. So a person who compares himself to God in a sense of being like him, her, or it means that that person is saying that they are shaped or built or manufactured like that entity. So clearly, not only do they observe themselves through the lenses of divinity, they also set the standard for themselves to be more close in character to that entity than anything else. That would mean that they look up to that entity they are comparing themselves to. I cannot say that I'm godlike if I do not look up to the entity that I'm comparing myself to. You first have to appreciate the entity before you can hope to shape yourself after it and gain some kind of pride in the process of shaping yourself after it. Because how can I say I'm godlike without looking up to God, without wanting to be more like Him? It is not possible. So a person who says they are godlike clearly believes in the existence of God in the first place, right? And then into God Himself in the second place. Notice that there is a big difference between believing in the existence of God and believing in God. Believing in the existence of God means that regardless of what the Bible says or any religious book for that matter, one firmly believes in the existence of a higher power that shaped the world as it is. And that higher power has designed rules that we must all abide by for the harmony of life as we know it. Believing in God means that one only believes in the existence of God through the scriptures, the holy scriptures. What would you respond if I asked you why you follow the Ten Commandments? Would you respond that it is because God asked you to? Think about it. What would you respond if I asked you to explain to me the logic behind the Ten Commandments? Why should you love the other person like you love yourself? Would you be able to respond to that question, to answer it without invoking the Bible? Think about it. That is a conversation for a different day, but let's move on for now. The main part of our conversation here is to understand why and how one could embody the characteristic of God. The reason is that God created everything, as we saw it earlier. He did so in a way to imbue orderliness in creation, meaning that everything in God's creation makes sense on a larger picture. In other words, when something happens in life, we humans might not understand it right away or even ever. But when one has the capacity of zooming out, it all makes sense on the larger picture because it links parts of life that are unlinkable to human perception. Other than that, we mostly like God and adore Him and worship Him because we see greatness in everything He does and everything He has created. Reality has been existing for countless millennia. Still, there remains so many things for us to uncover about God, and that makes us feel so small in front of Him. Also, that greatness always leaves a certain feeling behind that resonates with us on a molecular level when we come in presence of it. So far, we have spoken of omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence. But those are only theoretical facts that do not mean much to most people. Now, properly speaking, we have touched on orderliness and greatness and presence. Those are things we can comprehend because it is more accessible to our small minds. Many people won't understand the concept of omnipotence, but speaking about being great at something may be in the scope of our comprehension. And then we could start to understand omnipotence through the statement of being great at not only a single thing, but rather everything that ever touched existence. In the same light, when omniscience is evoked, it might be more concrete for a human mind to comprehend it when it's spoken of from the perspective of orderliness, because extreme orderliness is the organization of simple things in a way that might seem complex and non-understandable to inferior minds. Hence, the ultimate perception of science that we must bow to. Thus, omniscience can be viewed as extreme orderliness in everything, in a way that makes every single thing come together and make sense. The third characteristic is omnipresence, right? In our scope of vision, it's still a little weird to us to understand the presence of a single entity everywhere at the same time. But logically though, when one truly observes the whole thing, this is how it appears. God has created the world we live in, but how did He create it? Through His words, right? We said it before. His word being part of Himself. So He imbued part of Himself into everything He created. So when anything that is part of our reality reacts, it is really God reacting. He's part of water, light, darkness, and everything we ever can think of. He's even more so part of ourselves because we are the ones He really created looking like Him. So when we say we're godlike, it doesn't have to be a gloating statement. It can also only mean that we know we are like Him, and He is part of us. Meaning, He is present in us, all of us, at the same time. So, He is omnipresent. So, to make the characteristics of God a little more understandable, we have used literal expressions such as extreme orderliness to describe omniscience, extreme greatness in everything to describe omnipotence, and the feeling of great presence in all of us at the same time to describe omnipresence. But how does it apply to a simple human being? How can a human being emulate the characteristics of God? That is an interesting question. The fact is that since the time of creation, we have been like God than we can ever imagine. But only a few of us have been able to epitomize the idea of that godlikeness. We have seen Sherlock Holmes, the character created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. We have seen Jesus, the Son of God himself. We have seen Einstein. In no way am I comparing these people to each other. That would be preposterous. However, what do they have in common? For one, they are unconventional. Then they are confident, extremely confident. And then they are bold and humble at the same time. Pay attention, it is weird to have boldness, confidence, and humility at the same time. But bear with me, I'll explain. As I said earlier, God is present in all of us. So His design is present in all of us. His will is present in all of us. His orderliness, His greatness, His presence are present in all of us. The ones amongst us that have been able to tap into those attributes are the ones who have been able to tune in and to regain consciousness in those things. Earlier, we spoke of the universal mind. We spoke of the mind in which we all exist. And then later, we said that since the mind in which we exist also created us, then part of the mind is inside of us too, right? Meaning that the universal mind is inside of each and every one of us. However, we can only have access to it if we decide to look inside of ourselves. As we observe our behavior throughout a given day, we can see ourselves acting naturally regarding certain matters. Those things seem so natural to us that we can hardly believe that we learned them growing up. With absolutely zero disrespect for disabled people, walking seems so natural to us, right? We walk or talk or use our body parts so easily that we never even question the learning process of those things. And that is because we internalized the learning process and it became so ingrained in our collective subconscious that it has become normal to walk and talk and use our body parts. And the contrary of those things when we reach a certain age is what we deem unnatural, right? Because when we reach a certain age and we don't talk, we don't walk, or we don't use our body parts in a certain way, it starts to feel unnatural. And then we start asking, what is wrong with this kid? Why isn't he walking yet? And so on. In the same manner then, we can internalize the attributes of God that we just described. So we can internalize orderliness at the highest level we possibly can. We can internalize greatness in everything at the highest level we possibly can. And we can internalize extreme feelings of presence at the highest level we possibly can. The same way God created us and everything else by putting part of Himself in everything, we can also create everything we touch by putting part of us in everything. And the way of doing that is by being conscious and present and definite and intentional in everything we do. When we decide to send an email to a partner in business, what makes the email such a great email? It is not the fact that it was written by Grammarly or that it was written by AI, but rather that it was written with precision, intention, and with a deliberate idea in mind. the person we send it to can almost sense that they are talking to us directly as they read the email. Now, when we are able to do something as small and simple as writing an email with the attributes of God, we can now transfer the same capacity into great things. When we decide to achieve a life goal with the same attributes, we become godlike. Because just like God, we now know exactly what we are doing, and we are doing it with intention. We are doing it deliberately, with orderliness, with greatness, with extreme presence. Now, let's take it a step further. Being godlike is not only about embodying the external characteristics of God, but also about embodying the virtues that God prescribes. And amongst those virtues, we have courage, resilience, and so on. When we decide to do something as mild as playing a game of chess, for example, we know the rules, don't we? We know that the rook moves diagonally. We know that the queen is the most powerful element on the board. That's basic. Now, think about applying orderliness to that basic knowledge that you have. Now you can see and do simple moves, put them together in a way to make it extra complex, right? Now, apply greatness to that, meaning you can act precisely and with intention when you move your pawn. Now, think about it from a business perspective. It would mean that every single move you make expresses a feel that you can internalize, because you customized that feel. It is not random. You can feel it. You are there with the pawn as you're moving it. Right there, when you apply all those godly attributes to the chess game, the person you're playing with will be under the impression that you are God, because it would feel to him that you can see everything and from every perspective. That is exactly what it means to be godlike. The only difference is that now you are applying those characteristics in a bigger plane, on a bigger level, to a lifelike level. From a chess player's perspective, you can see everything on the board, rightfully, because you are bigger than the board. But when you transfer that view to the bigger scale of real life, it becomes more amazing, because now you are dealing with what really hurts, real threats, real emotions, real things that will either make you or break you. Now you are fighting for your life. On the chessboard, a loss is a loss. In real life, a loss can mean death. This is what you are dealing with. Every move you make in life, you can't unmake it. Every choice stacks up to where you'll find yourself right after that move. You might be in a better place, but you might also be in a fucked up place. And all you can do is suck it up and keep moving. When you are godlike, you move like God. Well, not every time, because you are still human, but at least you try to. You win sometimes, but most of the times you fuck up, you lose. Then you regroup, you reassess, you count the loss, you examine the wins, and you act accordingly into your next move. Being godlike does not mean that you will never make mistakes. It does not mean then you'll never lose. You are just godlike, you're not God. But when it happens, you deal with it. You do not shy away. You don't get all bitter. You can't take a moment to assess the loss. to even mourn the loss, but you've got to come back with the same orderliness, or rather, a sharper one, a greater sense of greatness, and more presence, because when you internalize all your actions, you reinstate your presence and you become strong, more potent, more sight, more presence. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is godlikeness. Remember, being godlike is not for God, because He is God. Being godlike is for humans. Achieving omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscience by being just a weakling is godlikeness. And that is what you're meant to be. Achieving godlikeness is even noteworthy when you do it when all odds are stacked against you. Look deep inside of yourself. Find the universal mind, the one God left there when He created you. Take it, use it, become orderly. Become the greatest you can be. Become the most present you can possibly be. And do it in spite of everything. Then and only then can you become the God Aristotle was speaking of, because you do not mingle with mere humans because you need to, but rather because in the light of what you know about everything you have discovered about yourself, you have to, because you know you can bring improvement to life as we all know it. You are godlike. We are godlike. I am godlike. In the meantime, I'll let y'all go ahead and verify. I know that life is dangerous sometimes, if not all the time. But we still have to live. Life does not allow you a specific time to achieve greatness. You have all your years. You have everything you need to achieve greatness. In the meantime, I am Ice. And this is the Ice Pod. I'll see you next week. Peace. Mesdemoiselles, Mesdames et Messieurs, si vous avez apprécié cet épisode ou n'importe lequel des autres que j'ai pu mettre à votre disposition jusque-là, n'hésitez pas à le mettre en commentaire, n'hésitez pas à vous abonner à ma chaîne, n'hésitez pas à me faire un don de n'importe quelle nature qu'il sera. Je suis disposé à le recevoir. Nous avons besoin de tout le support que nous pouvons avoir pour faire grandir cette chose que nous sommes en train de faire ici. Bientôt, nous aurons une page Patreon sur laquelle vous pourrez avoir accès à des épisodes plus exclusifs. Nous aurons aussi une page YouTube sur laquelle vous pourrez voir ma vilaine face. Et bientôt, il y aura une page Instagram sur laquelle nous pourrons interagir de façon moins figée. Alors, d'ici là, portez-vous bien.